What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like, whatever, dude.
Hey. Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand. You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
All right, Tricia has been following this mystery maybe a little bit closer than I have, so I'm late to the game. But this was another, no?
Shake your head. As much as everybody is this
week. Well, I didn't know anything about it, but Kevin Wheeler stopped me in the, it sounds like I was walking through the kitchen and Kevin Wheeler's like, hey, Ryan, stop. Did you hear about this mystery in Kansas City? That's not exactly the way it happened.
It's weird because Kevin's been doing that to everybody this week.
Oh, okay. So
yeah,
it's not
just me. He actually got pulled into the boss's office. Like, Kevin, you got to stop your freaking people out.
Yeah, your radio show needs to be on the radio, not in real life. Yeah.
Nobody has time for that, Kevin.
Right.
Calm down.
So the story that we're referring to, and apparently we're both catching up on here, is this mystery in Kansas City. And I think part of the reason I'm so interested in this is because it has to do with the weather in Kansas City, which is very close to what the weather's been here. And so it feels a little bit more like this is local.
But the whole thing's weird. Give us the quick rundown.
Yeah. Okay. So a guy named Jordan Willis was having people over for a Chiefs game on January 7th. He's in his late 30s. He had a couple buddies over, Clayton McGeaney, who's 36, a guy named David, who's 37, a guy named Ricky, who's 38, and apparently one other guy that is not important to the story. He just had them over to watch the Chiefs game. Chiefs won. They're all happy. They probably had a few beers. We don't know, actually. That's part of the story. Then they leave, or those three guys at least leave. There's a fourth one who stuck around for a little while who seems like a character who, if this were a movie, you'd be like, there's something up with that guy.
Yeah, how'd this guy get away unscathed?
But nobody's talking about that guy.
So four friends are over at a buddy's house. Apparently the families say that they do watch games all the time. This is super normal. Three of them go missing.
Well, but Jordan, the guy who invited him, doesn't even know that.
Right, but three of them go missing for what, days, right?
Yeah.
Before anybody...
Yeah, at least 2 days before they find that not only are their cars still at his house...
And he doesn't know that?
But they were parked on the street. So that's part of the weirdness of the story.
I don't care. I know my friend's cars. If I'm hanging out with them, I notice that their car's still there.
I would have to see where this guy lives to see if it's a busy street and they parked a little bit away and he didn't notice. But that is part of the story. But they find all three of the friends dead in the backyard of this guy's house.
Yeah.
It's been below freezing, so the bodies are fairly preserved. But if you recall, now this is before things got really, really cold in the Midwest here. So it was only the night this apparently happened, it only got down to like 29. But they apparently froze to death in the backyard.
Uh-huh.
So what he's saying is he went to bed, Jordan goes to bed, says goodbye to his friends. Three of them are leaving. He says goodbye. One of them's hanging around, maybe, well, I don't know why. Those three guys then went somehow into the backyard and passed out, or maybe they hung out for a while.
All three of them passed out
back
there.
All three of them?
Yeah, that's usually how that works.
All three of them.
They went and took a nap outside together.
Go in the backyard.
Okay, I've been to parties.
Okay.
Not everyone is that hammered at most parties.
No.
Sometimes there's one guy. Oftentimes there's one guy that could pass out in the backyard, but not three.
All three of them supposedly, and this is, I mean, not that he's saying this is what happened, because he's saying, I don't know what happened. But according to him, what would have had to have happened would be these three guys go in the backyard. I guess they keep drinking, or maybe they pop some pills or they do some drugs or something, and they get whacked out enough that they pass out and then they freeze to death. That is an incredibly unlikely scenario. Right. And then you add the fact that he works from home. So it's not as if he got up the next morning and left and didn't look in the backyard. He had to have, for 2 to 3 days, not look in his own backyard and see dead bodies, because he still didn't know, nor see any cars that he recognized. So that's where everybody's like, this is suspicious. This guy is suspicious.
Well, the guy is suspicious. I almost give this guy a pass on the backyard thing. It's below freezing outside. I don't look in my backyard for days at a time, just the way my house is set up. I'd have to see how his house is set up.
Right.
I would notice my friend's cars. There's no way I wouldn't notice my friend's cars out there. And I don't know. The whole thing's weird to me. The weirdest part to me is there's a quote that the police agency stressed that this case has not been ruled a homicide or suspicious death because there were no obvious signs of foul play. Isn't the situation itself suspicious?
The situation is foul play. Something's
wrong. It's suspicious.
Wrong.
Like,
yes.
Even if there's no sign of, even if we're just taking it at face value that these guys went out back, all three took a group nap outside and froze. That is suspicious. Like,
yes.
What are you talking about?
Well, and the other thing, so his lawyer says Jordan is unaware of how his friends died. Like the rest of us, Jordan is anxiously awaiting the results of the autopsy and toxicology, which they're doing, mm-hmm. which is good. They have to do that. So if they find out that these guys were like really, really super drunk or had taken something else that caused them to die, you know, what if they were like, oh, let's pop this thing, and it had fentanyl, and it killed them. You know? That's a possibility.
True.
But that's pretty unlikely that it would hit all three of them.
All at once. All out back.
Yeah. And then the unlikelihood of him not noticing any of this,
mm-hmm.
you know, because even after you hang out with your friends, isn't it possible that one of them would text or you'd text each other in the next couple of days? I'm not saying that's the only thing.
Well, I mean, all these men had families. They all have wives or girlfriends or whatever. Those people would, if
they would know,
if my husband doesn't come home from his football watching party, I'm going to call the person who he was with
night.
Last.
Yes.
That night I'm calling,
hey,
our friends and
it's
saying,
it's 1 a.m. What are you guys
doing?
Have
you seen him? Because I'm going to call the cops if you haven't.
Yes.
Like, I'm going to, do I need to come over? I'm driving by. And honestly, the families are like, what the heck? But I'm driving by if I'm the families that night looking for cars, trying
in the rare, like everything falling perfectly here. Let's say all three of the wives or girlfriends or families of these guys, and I don't know if all of them are even married, but let's say even one of them is, or has a girlfriend or something. Maybe she falls asleep before he gets home and thinks, oh, he's coming home. He may be passed on the couch. But then when you wake up in the morning, something's still wrong.
You call the police, you start looking, and the first thing the police do is go to Jordan's house where they say, wait, isn't that Brian's car?
Can we
car
just walk
or
around? Yeah.
Can we just take a lap? I just don't understand how it took so long to find these bodies.
It is. It's so
weird.
Strange. And the other thing is that even if... So let's say that Jordan is guilty here. Let's say that he had planned something.
I'm not sure he is. I'm not actually sure Jordan is. I'm not sure that this other guy might be. I don't know.
The weird other guy that nobody's
other
talking
guy.
About?
Or there's some kind of cult that I don't know what's happening here. It's just weird. Anyway, so let's say Jordan's guilty.
Okay, so let's say he is guilty and he decided, I'm going to off my friends tonight. Or he's just going to push the boundary with them with some drugs or something. What is his motive for killing them or for even hurting them?
Mm-hmm.
Because he obviously has been friends with these guys for some time. They do this all the time. The Chiefs are in the playoffs. Like, it seems like you'd just be going, well, next week again. Why this moment where you like, this is the time when I'm going to push this boulder over the cliff.
Uh-huh.
You know, so even
it doesn't like there is no clear motive, and any kind of that's the whole like means motive opportunity thing, right? So in that regard, Jordan's not a great suspect,
right? But all of the things that he didn't do and notice mm-hmm. make him a suspicious character.
And maybe it was just a weird, horrible accident.
I have a feeling that that's the way this is going to end. That they go, you know what? This was just a weird circumstance, unfortunate.
These three guys went out back, smoked a cigarette, like,
yeah.
clean up, you know, hang out a few minutes before and they head home.
Whatever, they're all affected by the same. Mm-hmm. If they find some sort of drug in their system, that almost will ease my conscience about it a
little
bit.
Like that they all, yeah, that they all took something.
Yeah.
That they were, yeah.
But it just, all the other stuff around it is so strange. Like you said, because that's, I was thinking about all the things Jordan didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right about even the families. It took 2 to 3 days.
That's weird to me. I would at least find that car by the night or the next morning.
Exactly. Yeah, your car's gone.
Yeah.
Your husband or your boyfriend's gone.
I might not be able to find my husband in like,
yeah,
you know, a half hour, but I can find his car.
But you're definitely calling that guy or going to his house if you don't have his number.
Yes.
And being like, dude, what is up? Mm-hmm. My boyfriend has not been home for 2 days.
Yeah.
He was here last. Where is he?
Yeah, it wouldn't take 2 days for me.
It would take
hours. And
Jordan's just working like his. Yeah. I get up on Monday and Tuesday, just doing your job from home, and nobody's sounding the alarm. It's just
strange. Families and the police should have been at Jordan's house the next morning.
What if you find out that this is a huge conspiracy between all of them, and they all hated these three guys?
Like all the families.
All the families. Jordan, the extra guy.
I mean, the whole thing is super sad because there are families. There are kids involved. It's a weird deal.
See, I don't know anything about the families.
Yeah, I do a little bit. I don't know names or how many kids, but I do
but
know
that families.
There are families involved.
Wow. Yeah. Gosh. How nuts. Mm-hmm. How nuts. I hope we find out more just for the sake of this being so strange. I mean, we have no connection to them. So it's more of like a true crime podcast that we're watching.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, these are people. It does seem a little bit worse because they're close. Like if this was in Oregon, you wouldn't think about it.
It's
but
like
this
more
is Kansas
relatable
City.
When...
You're like, yeah, it's a Chiefs game. Everybody kind of knew that was going on. Yeah.
Like we were all watching that game.
The
what?
Weather was similar, you know, here.
Yeah.
You know. Anyway, well, I'm going to stay updated on this now that I know that it exists and was finding out about it this week.
Thanks, Kevin Wheeler.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin Wheeler. We'll be right back.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Well, I think if you listen to the show for any time, especially if you podcast the show and you've listened to a lot of it, you'll know that I will follow the facts wherever they go regarding these touchy issues like election interference / election security / past election improprieties, wherever they go. And if you think, oh, you know, you talk about this a lot, but I never really hear you give both sides. Well, then listen to the podcast because I have had on the guy who sued Mike Lindell and won and beat him because Mike Lindell's claims to me and apparently to these courts look ridiculous. Most of his claims are wrong. So if you follow the facts and you find out that somebody's making stuff up or they're just misled, which is what it sounds like Mike Lindell's been doing, he's been paying a lot of money to people who are trying to turn up things for him to justify their jobs. But they're not turning up anything legit, at least from what I've seen. Now, with that in mind, I've been following this case in Georgia, which was set to begin a couple weeks ago. Now, I'm reading from the AP here. It says, trial set to begin Tuesday, but this is like 2 weeks ago now, stems from a lawsuit that long predates claims of election interference. It was originally filed in 2017. So this is pre-2020 stuff, okay? By several individual voters and the Coalition for Good Governance, which advocates for election integrity way before the 2020 election and targeted the outdated paperless voting systems used at the time in Georgia. The state in 2019 prohibited the state, this judge, prohibited the state from using the antiquated machines beyond that year. The state had agreed to purchase new machines from Dominion a few weeks earlier, but scrambled to deploy them ahead of 2020. So they still used the machines that the judge says you can't use in 2020 because of everything going on in 2020. Before the machines were distributed statewide, the activists amended their lawsuit to take aim at the new system. Okay, so this was on trial. The machines were on trial, really getting their first true shake, or at least a higher up, because this was a lower court. So this trial is taking place, and it is now ended. Now, there hasn't been any sort of judgment, but I will tell you that what we've found from this trial is very, very interesting. Because during the trial, and I'll read from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution here, it says, huddled around a voting machine in a federal courtroom, a small crowd watched as expert witness Alex Halderman demonstrated how someone could meddle with a Georgia election within seconds. Halderman, a University of Michigan computer scientist, changed results of a hypothetical referendum that they just kind of made up. They made up an election between President George Washington and Benedict Arnold. And he rigged the machine to print out as many ballots as he wanted. All he needed to do this was a pen to reach a button inside the touchscreen, a fake $10 voter card he had programmed, or a $100 USB device that he plugged into a cord connected to a printer, rewriting the touchscreen's code. He did this all in front of everybody in the room. He said, it's easy, watch, and he just did it. Mark Nisi covers voting rights for elections for the Atlantic Journal-Constitution. He also reports on the Georgia House of Representatives and Government. So it's about the reporter there, just giving you some credentials. And another one here. So now if you're wondering what happens from here after they have shown the machines being tampered with in court, and I'm just giving you a straight report here. I'm not really adding anything. I'm just telling you what these reports say and what has happened, because I want to keep you updated. You go, okay, well, I've heard all this. How does that impact 2020? Well, it doesn't, because 2020 is in the rearview mirror. You say, okay, well, Ryan, well, how does that impact 2024? Well, this is from the Atlanta Civic Circle. It says, U.S. Northern District of Georgia Judge Amy Totenberg has been conducting the bench trial, meaning there's no jury, since January 9th. After both sides have presented their case, which has now concluded, this article's from before that, she could decide to rejoin or prohibit the state from using its Dominion voting machine systems. Again, this is from the Atlanta Civic Circle, which could lead to Georgia voters choosing candidates by pen and paper in this year's presidential election in November. Such a decision could also impact voters in other states using the same voting machines for years to come through additional lawsuits or new policies. I will tell you the one good thing about this is that it's happening early enough in the year that if this judge says, yeah, and it looks like there's a history of her agreeing here. You know, I'm trying to walk through the whole history. Judge Amy Totenberg is overseeing this case. I'm trying to see, was she overseeing the one in 2017 is what I was trying to find out. But I think that was a lower court. But if she decides that there are real ramifications here for the way Georgia votes, it could impact not only the U.S. presidential election, because Georgia is an important state. It could impact the way all states vote if they're using Dominion. And again, listen, I'm not slandering Dominion here. I'm saying these are the facts. This is what could happen according to multiple outlets. Got me? Okay. Presenting the facts of the case as I like to do, and it looks like there are some serious problems. I'll continue to report as I find out more, but that is what's happened in the last 2 weeks in this major trial in Georgia that could impact everything that nobody is talking about right now. Mark Cox, the famous one, is coming in next. Let's talk about Missouri.
Yeah, but, you know, there's nothing I can do about my parking spot. I'm just going to have to hump it a few extra yards every day. And you know what? That's okay. While we are actually trying to fight for the unborn in this state, Caleb Brown and Cindy O'Loughlin are engaging in these petty games. And by the way, guys, we found out last night. we found out last night, this has not entered the public discussion yet, we found out last night that in addition to taking our parking spots, there is an ongoing conversation. They're actually considering taking the furniture out of our Senate offices.
Really?
What?
Yes.
What, you just gonna sit on the floor?
They're going to make us sit on the floor of our offices.
Well, that's Bill Igel on none other than Mark Cox's morning show. And this is Ryan Wiggins, Wiggins America. Of course, I am from Illinois, so I'm a bit of an outsider watching what's happening in the Missouri legislature with some consternation, I guess, because it's not directly affecting me, but these are issues that are very local, I guess statewide local. But I brought in the expert himself. Mark Cox is here.
Well, thank you, Ryan. I appreciate the invitation.
Because most of the information that I'm finding out about what is happening in the Missouri legislature, which is crazy contentious right now. I've never seen it this contentious before, at least openly. Maybe behind closed doors this stuff happens, but I've never seen it this much drama in the Missouri legislature all at once. And you and other people, you know, around here are much more well-versed in and know these people. So explain to me, I want to know the timeline for somebody who's kind of catching up, because that's me. When the Missouri Freedom Caucus started, that's kind of when all of this started to blow up, right?
Yeah, well, they originally called themselves the Conservative Caucus, right, down in Jeff City.
Okay.
And they did things like push for conservative causes, things that were important for conservatives, you know, including the trigger law, for example. That was pushed by Senator Andrew Koenig. He was a member of the Conservative Caucus, which triggered the ban on abortion once Roe v. Wade got overturned. I mean, they are the people who, in my opinion, have gone to Jefferson City and done what they promised their constituents they would do. They don't generally go to Jefferson City and get distracted because certain lobbying groups want them to make it sound good, but in the end of the game, not pass important legislation. Mm-hmm. That happens a lot in Jefferson City. And then last year, they announced near the end of session that they were disbanding the Conservative Caucus. And they gave the impression of it being a kinder, gentler approach to legislating. And a lot of people thought it was they're just doing this because here's what happens. There's a supermajority of Democrats in Illinois, right? Mm-hmm. They pretty much do what they want.
Yes.
We have a supermajority of Republicans. One of your fellow Illinoisans said to me the other day to stop showing off my conservative state privilege by pointing that out. but it's not, because it's dysfunctional, right?
Yes.
Just like in Washington, D.C., there are people who run on a conservative platform, and then they govern with the go-along-to-get-along crowd once they get to Washington, D.C. It's the same problem we have in Jeff City.
Yeah.
You've got people and from all over the state, it's not just the greater St. Louis region, who say one thing, and then they get to Jeff City and they vote with the swamp. Initiative petition reform has been the big issue here, right? So last year, they promised they would get it done. I had Caleb Rowden, the Senate leader, on my show a year ago talking about it.
Let me stop right there, because I want to know who – I hear a lot of names. I want to know who the key players are in this moment in both the Freedom Caucus and who are fighting against them.
Okay. So that would be Senator Bill Igel, Senator Rick Bratton, Senator Andrew Koenig.
These are in the Freedom Caucus.
These are the Freedom the new Missouri Freedom Caucus, which it really was only formed and announced a couple of weeks ago. But it's an offshoot of the Freedom Caucus in the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
They decided to set up a group in each state around the country, and so far I think they have 11 or 12 of these set up. So those are some of the key players who have been involved in this on the Freedom Caucus side versus leadership in the Senate in Missouri,
which is Republican.
Caleb Rowden, mm-hmm. right, who's the Senate leader, and Senator Cindy O'Loughlin, who is the floor leader in the Senate.
Okay. And is the key issue this initiative petition reform?
It should be, mm-hmm. right? And you know, I think they've got some other key issues like vouchers for education and giving people more educational freedom. But IP is the big one, because here's what we know. In the state of Missouri, you can amend the Constitution with a simple majority. I don't know what that's like in Illinois.
I tell you that the General Assembly has to vote on it first, then send it to voters. So it's very difficult.
But it's in Missouri, the legislature can do that. They can put an issue on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
But the people can also put an issue on the ballot if they collect, I think it's 175,000 signatures before the deadline, which is usually March or April of an election year. The difficulty with it is it used to not be a problem. It's the way the system was set up originally in the Constitution. This is how it spells it out. If you're going to amend the Constitution, this is what you have to do. Somewhere along the line, a couple of years ago, outside interests realized by throwing enough money at it, you could buy your way onto the ballot. So you just spend millions of dollars to hire people at $20 an hour to stand on a street corner and collect signatures until you have the number of signatures you need plus some. In case there are some that get thrown out, you still have a comfortable pad there. So your initiative gets on the ballot. You can buy your initiative onto the ballot. It's a problem. And then if you don't have any organized opposition, you spend millions more, and this is money from outside of the state of Missouri, spent in the state of Missouri to pass bills into the Missouri Constitution that become part of the Constitution, the state.
Ultimately,
right?
What you're saying is that outside interests outside of Missouri can ultimately spend their way into the Missouri Constitution.
Yes.
Which is a big deal.
I know. So now they want to put abortion in there. Now mm-hmm. they've got an abortion initiative petition funded out of the anger of Roe v. Wade being overturned that is going to make it okay, legal, that no law can be passed by the legislature overriding this constitutional right to end the life of your child. I oppose abortion. But it's not just the abortion issue. The marijuana issue, for example. They bought their way onto the ballot.
Yep.
They spent millions of dollars in slickly produced ads that in many ways were very deceptive, because this was a 200-page addition. Like, the bill was it was hundreds of pages long. Nobody knew what all was in there. It basically benefited the marijuana industry, and they funded it, right?
Yeah.
And the poor old sucker on the street that just wants the right to smoke a joint had no idea. All they cared about was that pot was going to be legal.
Yeah, they don't care about how that happens.
And they don't care about the medical costs or any of that that goes along with it. So suddenly they bought their way onto the ballot, and with enough slickly produced ads to make it seem like it was a positive thing and no organized opposition, it became law.
And now you have this giant drug lobby that's in the state, excuse me, that has tons and tons of money that they didn't have before,
yeah.
because they're making all the money from all this. And again, the average person who wants to smoke a joint, they don't care about any of this. They just wanted it legal. Well, there's ways to legalize it that weren't putting it in the freaking Constitution.
So in Ohio, they tried to pass an initiative petition reform effectively. And everybody wants to say, well, you're only doing this because you're afraid that abortion's going to be... that the majority of people will want abortion protected in Missouri. This is a bigger issue. You should not be able to amend the Missouri Constitution with a simple majority vote. Make it a 56 or 57% threshold so that you have to get some buy-in from the other side in order to amend the Constitution. That's not even a supermajority. I'm not saying 75%. I'm saying 56, 57%. Marijuana would have failed if you had to hit that mm-hmm. threshold. That's what we want. That's what we want in effect in August of this year before this other vote comes up in November. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
If it's passed right now and put on the ballot for August and we can get it passed by the voters in Missouri, then it would be in effect for November. So any initiative on the ballot would have to hit that 57, 58% threshold. Now, that's a target. They haven't named a specific percentage yet, but that's what I'm guessing it'll be.
So that's all why this is so important.
Yes.
I do want to know what the details of what has happened, because I'm hearing people being thrown off of committees. And I mean, these are people that we talk to, especially you guys do.
It's nasty.
And this is among Republicans who are trying to stop abortion, who should be unified on an issue like that. But there is so much infighting. Explain to me why this is happening from both sides, because I really would like to know what the Freedom Caucus is saying and then what Caleb Rowden and his people are saying.
There's a backstory here, and there's a lot of history between these folks that don't agree on things right now, and they're angry that 2 years ago Bill Igel filibustered near the end of the session. It prevented probably a couple of bills that should have gotten through that leadership wanted to get pushed through to not pass before the session expired because there was something Bill wanted that they wouldn't do, so he filibustered. So they're still angry about that from 2 years ago.
So this is personal. Yes. It has nothing to do with the people of Missouri, in a way, was what you're saying.
A lot of it's personal.
Okay.
A lot of it's personal. And there's also some disagreement on, number one, whether we need an initiative petition reform, and number two, what that should look like, right?
Okay.
Just to back up a little bit, you only have to gather signatures in 6 of the 8 congressional districts. One proposal is, well, you should have to gather signatures in all 8 congressional districts so it represents everyone. And, of course, the people gathering that don't want that because that means rural congressional districts as well as the ones that contain St. Louis and Kansas City and Springfield.
Right.
So it would make it more difficult if you had to do that. Plus, you would have the higher voter threshold. So there have been various different versions of this, right? You get the impression that leadership down there doesn't want to wade into those waters. They're afraid, and I've gotten personal texts and stuff telling me they don't think the voters of Missouri would pass it to begin with, and they're not sure if they want to look as bad as they did in Ohio by throwing something like that on the ballot in August and then having it fail, and they think that would just add fuel to whatever happens in November on the abortion initiative petition. You see what
I'm
saying?
Okay.
Because there would have to be 2 separate votes. Does that make any sense?
So that's what the leadership...
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Yeah, there's nothing I can do about my parking spot. I'm just going to have to hump it a few extra yards every day. And you know what? That's okay. While we are actually trying to fight for the unborn in this state, Caleb Brown and Cindy O'Loughlin are engaging in these petty games. And by the way, guys, we found out last night, this has not entered the public discussion yet. We found out last night that in addition to taking our parking spots, there is an ongoing conversation. They're actually considering taking the furniture out of our Senate offices.
Really?
What?
Yes.
What are you just going to sit on the floor?
They're going to make us sit on the floor of our offices.
Well, that's Bill Igel on none other than Mark Cox's morning show. And this is Ryan Wiggins, Wiggins America. Of course, I am from Illinois, so I'm a bit of an outsider watching what's happening in the Missouri legislature with some consternation, I guess, because it's not directly affecting me, but these are issues that are very local, I guess statewide local. But I brought in the expert himself. Mark Cox is here.
Well, thank you, Ryan. I appreciate the invitation.
Because most of the information that I'm finding out about what is happening in the Missouri legislature, which is crazy contentious right now. I've never seen it this contentious before, at least openly. Maybe behind closed doors this stuff happens, but I've never seen it this much drama in the Missouri legislature all at once. And you and other people, you know, around here are much more well-versed in and know these people. So explain to me, I want to know the timeline for somebody who's kind of catching up, because that's me. When the Missouri Freedom Caucus started, that's kind of when all of this started to blow up, right?
Yeah, well, they originally called themselves the Conservative Caucus, right, down in Jeff City.
Okay.
And they did things like push for conservative causes, things that were important for conservatives, you know, including the trigger law, for example. That was pushed by Senator Andrew Koenig. He was a member of the Conservative Caucus, which triggered the ban on abortion once Roe v. Wade got overturned. I mean, they are the people who, in my opinion, have gone to Jefferson City and done what they promised their constituents they would do. They don't generally go to Jefferson City and get distracted because certain lobbying groups want them to make it sound good, but in the end of the game, not pass important legislation. Mm-hmm. That happens a lot in Jefferson City. And then last year, they announced near the end of session that they were disbanding the conservative caucus, and they gave the impression of it being a kinder, gentler approach to legislating. And a lot of people thought it was they're just doing this because here's what happens. There's a supermajority of Democrats in Illinois, right? Mm-hmm. They pretty much do what they want.
Yes.
We have a supermajority of Republicans. One of your fellow Illinoisans said to me the other day to stop showing off my conservative state privilege by pointing that out. but it's not, because it's dysfunctional, right?
Yes.
Just like in Washington, D.C., there are people who run on a conservative platform, and then they govern with the go-along, to get along crowd once they get to Washington, D.C. It's the same problem we have in Jeff City.
Yeah.
You've got people and from all over the state, it's not just the greater St. Louis region, who say one thing, and then they get to Jeff City and they vote with the swamp. Initiative petition reform has been the big issue here, right? So last year, they promised they would get it done. I had Caleb Rowden, the Senate leader, on my show a year ago talking about it.
Let me stop right there, yeah, because I want to know who – I hear a lot of names. I want to know who the key players are in this moment in both the Freedom Caucus and who are fighting against them.
Okay. So that would be Senator Bill Eigel, Senator Rick Bratton, Senator Andrew Koenig.
These are in the Freedom Caucus.
These are the Freedom the new Missouri Freedom Caucus, which it really was only formed and announced a couple of weeks ago. But it's an offshoot of the Freedom Caucus in the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
They decided to set up a group in each state around the country, and so far I think they have 11 or 12 of these set up. So those are some of the key players who have been involved in this on the Freedom Caucus side versus leadership in the Senate in Missouri,
which is Republican.
Caleb Rowden, mm-hmm, right, who's the Senate leader, and Senator Cindy O'Loughlin, who is the floor leader in the Senate.
Okay. And is the key issue this initiative petition reform?
It should be, mm-hmm, right? And you know, I think they've got some other key issues like vouchers for education and giving people more educational freedom. But IP is the big one, because here's what we know. In the state of Missouri, you can amend the Constitution with a simple majority. I don't know what that's like in Illinois.
I tell you that the General Assembly has to vote on it first, then send it to voters. So it's very difficult.
Well, but it's in Missouri, the legislature can do that. They can put an issue on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
But the people can also put an issue on the ballot if they collect, I think it's 175,000 signatures before the deadline, which is usually March or April of an election year. The difficulty with it is it used to not be a problem. It's the way the system was set up originally in the Constitution. This is how it spells it out. If you're going to amend the Constitution, this is what you have to do. Somewhere along the line, a couple of years ago, outside interests realized by throwing enough money at it, you could buy your way onto the ballot. So you just spend millions of dollars to hire people at $20 an hour to stand on a street corner and collect signatures until you have the number of signatures you need plus some. In case there are some that get thrown out, you still have a comfortable pad there. So your initiative gets on the ballot. You can buy your initiative onto the ballot. It's a problem. And then if you don't have any organized opposition, you spend millions more, and this is money from outside of the state of Missouri, spent in the state of Missouri to pass bills into the Missouri Constitution that become part of the Constitution, the state.
Ultimately,
right?
What you're saying is that outside interests outside of Missouri can ultimately spend their way into the Missouri Constitution.
Yes.
Which is a big deal.
I know. So now they want to put abortion in there. Now, mm-hmm, they've got an abortion initiative petition funded out of the anger of Roe v. Wade being overturned that is going to make it okay, legal, that no law can be passed by the legislature overriding this constitutional right to end the life of your child. I oppose abortion, But it's not just the abortion issue. The marijuana issue, for example. They bought their way onto the ballot.
Yep.
They spent millions of dollars in slickly produced ads that in many ways were very deceptive, because this was a 200-page edition. Like, the bill was it was hundreds of pages long. Nobody knew what all was in there. It basically benefited the marijuana industry, and they funded it, right?
Yeah.
And the poor old sucker on the street that just wants the right to smoke a joint had no idea. All they cared about was that pot was going to be legal.
Yeah, they don't care about how that happens.
And they don't care about the medical costs or any of that that goes along with it. So suddenly they bought their way onto the ballot, and with enough slickly produced ads to make it seem like it was a positive thing and no organized opposition, it became law.
And now you have this giant drug lobby that's in the state, excuse me, that has tons and tons of money that they didn't have before,
yeah.
Because they're making all the money from all this. And again, the average person who wants to smoke a joint, they don't care about any of this. They just wanted it legal. Well, there's ways to legalize it that weren't putting it in the freaking Constitution.
So in Ohio, they tried to pass an initiative petition reform effectively. And everybody wants to say, well, you're only doing this because you're afraid that abortion's going to be... that the majority of people will want abortion protected in Missouri. This is a bigger issue. You should not be able to amend the Missouri Constitution with a simple majority vote. Make it a 56 or 57% threshold so that you have to get some buy-in from the other side in order to amend the Constitution. That's not even a supermajority. I'm not saying 75%. I'm saying 56, 57%. Marijuana would have failed if you had to hit that mm-hmm. threshold. That's what we want. That's what we want in effect in August of this year before this other vote comes up in November. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
If it's passed right now and put on the ballot for August and we can get it passed by the voters in Missouri, then it would be in effect for November. So any initiative on the ballot would have to hit that 57, 58% threshold. Now, that's a target. They haven't named a specific percentage yet, but that's what I'm guessing it'll be.
So that's all why this is so important.
Yes.
I do want to know what the details of what has happened, because I'm hearing people being thrown off of committees. And I mean, these are people that we talk to, especially you guys do.
It's nasty.
And this is among Republicans who are trying to stop abortion, who should be unified on an issue like that. But there is so much infighting. Explain to me why this is happening from both sides, because I really would like to know what the Freedom Caucus is saying and then what Caleb Rowden and his people are saying.
There's a backstory here, and there's a lot of history between these folks that don't agree on things right now, and they're angry that 2 years ago Bill Eigel filibustered near the end of the session. It prevented probably a couple of bills that should have gotten through, that leadership wanted to get pushed through, to not pass before the session expired, because there was something Bill wanted that they wouldn't do, so he filibustered. So they're still angry about that from 2 years ago.
So this is personal. Yes. It has nothing to do with the people of Missouri, in a way, was what you're saying.
A lot of it's personal.
Okay.
A lot of it's personal. And there's also some disagreement on, number one, whether we need initiative petition reform, and number two, what that should look like, right?
Okay.
Just to back up a little bit, you only have to gather signatures in 6 of the 8 congressional districts. One proposal is, well, you should have to gather signatures in all 8 congressional districts so it represents everyone. And, of course, the people gathering that don't want that, because that means rural congressional districts, as well as the ones that contain St. Louis and Kansas City and Springfield.
Right.
So it would make it more difficult if you had to do that. Plus, you would have the higher voter threshold. So there have been various different versions of this, right? You get the impression that leadership down there doesn't want to wade into those waters. They're afraid, and I've gotten personal texts and stuff telling me they don't think the voters of Missouri would pass it to begin with, and they're not sure if they want to look as bad as they did in Ohio by throwing something like that on the ballot in August and then having it fail, and they think that would just add fuel to whatever happens in November on the abortion initiative petition. You see what
I'm
saying?
Okay.
Because there would have to be 2 separate votes. Does that make any sense?
That's what the leadership is saying.
Leadership is concerned on a couple of points, but for some reason, conservatives have wanted this to be a priority from day one. We've been saying it since the end of the last session. You didn't get it done last year. You should have gotten it done last year. What you need to do on day one is send this to committee, have hearings on it, get a version that can pass both houses, and get it to the governor's desk so we can potentially vote on it in We could have voted on it in April, probably, but at the very least, they can put it on in August.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just been no will to do that among leadership in Republican leadership in Missouri. That's very frustrating to those of us who are conservative and care about this cause.
Now, this is really good to know, because this is why I wanted to have you here, is to find out what exactly. So it sounds to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong as we conclude here.
I trust you will.
That everybody does agree philosophically with the direction that we should be going. Leadership, Freedom Caucus, everybody. It's a matter more of how they're getting there. Is that right?
I'm not convinced that they all agree philosophically.
See, that's what I'm concerned about.
A poll was taken last year, a public opinion poll on whether or not people would support a initiative petition reform, and the result of it was lukewarm, right? But the question was not, it was very generic. It wasn't, do you support changing what it takes to put something into the Missouri Constitution, basically, without explaining that it wouldn't be a supermajority, it wouldn't be some impossible goal to reach, it would just make it a little more difficult. Because my argument's been to amend the United States Constitution, whatever they pass has to then be approved by 2/3 of the states. That's us well above
a
super majority.
Yeah.
It's a high bar. The bar should at least be a little higher in the state of Missouri. So to answer your question, I'm not sure there's a general consensus among leadership. But it's an important issue, and when you get silly things like this ridiculous marijuana law that they passed, I'm not saying I wouldn't have been okay with some version of it, but what they passed was silly, and it only passed because of the way people can buy their way onto the ballot and then produce ads that there's no opposition to, and there's nobody raising money to produce an ad on the other side saying this is a bad idea. So they're only getting one side of the story, and it's a, you know, super cleaned up, glamorized their version of it, and then it passes. We shouldn't be able to do that.
Well, this is beyond high drama. There's a lot at stake here, and that's why I wanted to talk to you about it and find out exactly what's going on. I feel like I do actually have a much better understanding of what it is, because you hear the headlines of so-and-so said this thing, and then they lost their parking spot, and you go, okay, I know there's a lot more behind all this, and it really does. I mean, it affects big deal stuff in Missouri. What's happening right now between these personalities?
It's going to affect what happens this entire legislative session. If they don't fix what the problem is down there, and a lot of it's ego,
yeah.
a lot of it is one side just not wanting to let the other side get any win at all. Virtually nothing will get done this legislative session, because even if the House passes bills, they're going to send them to the Senate, and the gears of the Senate are just clogged right now.
Yeah.
They're just not moving.
Well, let's pray that egos get put aside, no matter what they are and who they are, for the best of the people that these people are representing. Mark Cox, thank you so much. I really appreciate you being willing to come and explain this, because I didn't know anybody else who would be able to do it as well as you. So thank you.
Thank you, man. Always an honor to be on Wiggins America.
Thank you. So listen to the Mark Cox Morning Show coming up all this week. I'm sure there's going to be more drama, and hopefully it's moving in the right direction. This is Wiggins America. We'll be right back. Out of time. And then Mark Cox reminded me of this point that I never really got around to. It's easy for us to sit in St. Louis, pretty far from Washington, D.C., and definitely far from federal politics. How close are we to these things? We're not really knocking on the door of Washington. And say, that's the swamp, this is what they're doing, these are swampy people, and they're evil. And there is probably truth in that. But when it gets closer, when you're talking about Missouri politics, or Illinois for that matter, and you can see it happening a little bit. Not that I'm super plugged into Missouri especially, but these people are more around here at the station. You know, they're literally in the office at times. We do interviews with these people a lot more. You can see how the swamp happens. Because a lot of times it's not people who are inherently wrong. You know, they have no moral compass. Sometimes these are pretty good people. These are your relatives. These are the same types of people that you would be at the grocery store with, but they've gone into politics. And now they're in an environment where there's a lot of power at play and there's a lot of money. And then if there's any sort of nick in their armor, that's going to be exposed because they're on this stage now. And the higher you get, the more it's exposed and the more money there is, the more corruption. So it's not always that these people are setting out to do evil. It's that they kind of lose their way. And I would say even in the things that me and Mark were just talking about, a lot of the times what happens is the focus starts to become self rather than service. And of course, the second word in public service is service. That's the reason you got elected, is to be a public servant. But it's very easy to do for those things, even if you have good priorities, for it to become more about you, what you might gain out of this situation, or even, you know, grievances, so that you're sort of doing the opposite. You're fighting against good things and may not even be intending to. And I'm not trying to take a side by saying these things. I do have opinions on them. I just hope that people in this situation in particular, and really in all public service, could put themselves and their own personal interests and their personal grievances, excuse me, aside long enough to make things happen. I'm not even advocating for bipartisanship in saying this. I'm advocating for partisanship just in the Republican Party to come together, put the past aside, and put the people you're serving first. Hard part is, I'm sure all of them are saying that they are. We'll stop there. Let's get the podcast. Hey, if you missed any part of this show, you can pick it up by typing Wiggins America into your search engine. That comes up in several places. Thanks for listening. We will be with you again next week.
Get more at 971talk.com.
And then Mark Cox. Mark Cox reminded me of this point that I never really got around to. It's easy for us to sit in St. Louis, pretty far from Washington, D.C., and definitely far from federal politics. How close are we to these things? We're not really knocking on the door of Washington. And say, that's the swamp. This is what they're doing. These are swampy people, and they're evil. And there is probably truth in that. But when it gets closer, when you're talking about Missouri politics, or Illinois for that matter, and you can see it happening a little bit, not that I'm super plugged into Missouri especially, but these people are more around here at the station. You know, they're literally in the office at times. We do interviews with these people a lot more. You can see how the swamp happens, because a lot of times it's not people who are inherently wrong. You know, they have no moral compass. Sometimes these are pretty good people. These are your relatives. These are the same types of people that you would be at the grocery store with, but they've gone into politics. And now they're in an environment where there's a lot of power at play and there's a lot of money. And then if there's any sort of nick in their armor, that's going to be exposed because they're on this stage now. And the higher you get, the more it's exposed and the more money there is, the more corruption. So it's not always that these people are setting out to do evil. It's that they kind of lose their way. And I would say even in the things that me and Mark were just talking about, a lot of the times what happens is the focus starts to become self rather than service. And of course, the second word in public service is service. That's the reason you got elected, is to be a public servant. But it's very easy to do for those things, even if you have good priorities, for it to become more about you, what you might gain out of this situation, or even, you know, grievances, so that you're sort of doing the opposite. You're fighting against good things and may not even be intending to. And I'm not trying to take a side by saying these things. I do have opinions on them. I just hope that people in this situation in particular, and really in all public service, could put themselves and their own personal interests and their personal grievances, excuse me, aside long enough to make things happen. I'm not even advocating for bipartisanship in saying this. I'm advocating for partisanship just in the Republican Party to come together, put the past aside, and put the people you're serving first. Hard part is, I'm sure all of them are saying that they are. We'll stop there. Let's get the podcast. Hey, if you missed any part of this show, you can pick it up by typing Wiggins America into your search engine, and it comes up in several places. Thanks for listening. We will be with you again next week.
Get more at 971talk.com.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.